Greetings, and welcome to the First Foundation's Wealth Management Insights call. Today's call is being recorded. At this time, all participants have been placed in a listen-only mode. And now I would like to turn the call over to John Hacopian.
Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us. We're grateful to have the opportunity to speak with you today. Many of you joined us last week, and we wanted to do a follow-up call today. Before we start, I also want to encourage you to visit our News and Insights page on our website, where we have been posting commentaries on the market and the economy. And of course, you can always reach out to your wealth advisor for more information. We want to be sure you are able to access all resources available to you during this time. Okay, with that, let's begin. A lot has changed even in the past few days, and we wanted to share our thoughts with you. Again, I'm joined today by Rick Keller and Andrew Chan, who will help address some of the questions that we have been hearing from many of you. In the past week, our team has participated in many different conversations. We have spoken with many investment partners. We have heard from leaders of many of the companies we invest in. We have listened to many of the economists that we follow, and we have spoken with many of you. We wanted to share what we have learned and go over some of the common questions that we have been hearing. With that, Rick, we've been hearing a lot about this stimulus package. The markets have reacted favorably the last day or two. Talk to us about the stimulus package. We saw a stimulus package back in 2008. Is this package similar? And where does it differ? And then just what do you think the significance of it is?
Well, thank you, John, and thank you for joining us. I think the biggest difference between the package that is proposed and not yet passed is we're getting out in front of this thing much earlier than we did in 2008. 2008 was trying to catch up. And so the feds got out front in terms of reducing our interest rates now down to zero. We had two cuts. They were immediate. They were substantial. And that's a big plus. And then the other thing is the stimulus package they're talking about now is $2 trillion, just a massive spending package. And it is spending. But in addition to that, we've had another $2 to $4 trillion that's lined up by the Federal Reserve in terms of backstopping businesses, providing liquidity, making sure banks have adequate liquidity. So in 2008, when banks were part of the problem, this time it looks like banks are going to be part of the solution. The Fed is out in front this time as opposed to behind and trying to play catch-up last time.
Rick, last week you talked about has your economic forecast changed much? Last week you talked about the first quarter being down and then the second quarter seeing a pretty sharp decline and then maybe things starting to rebound in the third and fourth quarter.
Yeah, as everybody's aware, the virus started taking hold in February, but really it's in March when we had where the layoffs begin. And tomorrow morning we will have jobless claims for people that filed for unemployment across the country, but they're issued by every state. So tomorrow morning we'll hear how many people filed for unemployment the first time. And this could be a massive figure, but the real big numbers are going to be in the weeks ahead. So even though tomorrow will be bad, it gets really bad over the next couple weeks. And, you know, if you think about the sector, there are two sectors hit particularly hard. One is the oil and gas industry because of the collapse in oil prices. But secondly, the consumer-based industries that mostly as they relate to what we call the services sector, there the masses are going to be huge. But there are some, you know, the bright spot would probably be hospitals. And then outpatient care. These two areas are going to be expanding significantly, but sports and entertainment what we see in just like consumer gaming and tourism packages, these things, those three items probably offset all the positive that we see in hospitals outpatient. The single biggest deterrent of all is really in the hotels and food service that include all the restaurants and things that we're going to have just massive layoffs. But remember, if you are laid off from your job, you have 2 weeks of sick pay or vacation pay the company may be paying you, you may not be able to file your unemployment until the weeks ahead. So I look for these every Thursday morning. They're released 5:30 California time, 8 o'clock or 8:30 New York time, and they will significantly get worse for us. But those two sectors, services and oil and gas, are the two we have to keep an eye on the most, because it's going to take, for at least in the services sector, behavior in consumer. We can't have these lockdowns. They'll have to be lifted. And I know Trump has given us a date that provides some light at the end of the tunnel, although to come out with such date looks very premature at this point. And hopefully it's driven by the data and not the emotions out there, because this is going to be a very serious illness for a small portion of our population, but it could end up being quite deadly.
So, Rick, the stimulus package we said it's probably one of the largest we've seen anywhere, and it's going to help a lot of industries sort of bridge the gap to get to the other side. Do you think it eliminates sort of the worst case scenario that could have happened without the stimulus package?
Yes, I do. I think in the totality of the the stimulus package is spending, right? So if somebody's unemployed and they cannot pay their bills, and now through unemployment insurance and checks they receive direct from the government, they have money in their pocket to spend, whether it be on things as simple as groceries and medicines and things, but also in their bill pay. And so this bill is meant to put money in the hands of the people who need it. The federal government rules, or the Fed rules as they relate to banking, may say if your tenants aren't paying the rent, you as owner of that apartment building may not have to declare or may be able to add those mortgage payments to the balance of your loan. So we're seeing the regulators come out and trying to get some solutions out there out in front, so that as people are confronted by the layoffs and the lack of funds to do bills, that we don't have a 2008 back again in terms of the bankruptcies and things like that. So I think the worst case scenario is really off the table, really on both sides, both from the fiscal and monetary standpoint.
Drew, Rick talked a little bit about what's happened on the fiscal side. On the monetary side, even since last Wednesday, there's been more Fed stimulus. The Fed's gone bigger, faster than ever before, much more significant than they went in 2008. Talk about some of the things that they've added since our last call last Wednesday, and how that's impacted some of the bond market.
Sure, John. The comment was when the Fed cut rates down to zero, they shot a bazooka. Now over the weekend, they basically shot a missile at it, this crisis, basically trying to backstop all the different sectors within the fixed income world. What we saw last week is actually a little run on fixed income. Credit spreads widened out pretty significantly, even in investment grade and muni bonds, which is pretty crazy. We tracked some of the ETF flows and the discounts and premiums, and we were seeing things like investment-grade ETFs trading at 5 to 6% discounts, even Treasury ETFs, which are, you know, backed by the full faith of the government, were trading at pretty significant discounts. It was a very dislocated, disjointed market. Obviously, a lot of things in terms of flows, people rebalancing, trying to sell things that held up better in value to purchase equities particularly, or just even meaning just redemptions. The Fed's really done a great job in really looking at the plumbing. And what they've done is created six actual special purpose vehicles. So I think last week they announced two to three of them. Now they actually have six. Two of them are targeting actually corporate credit markets specifically. You know, one is actually targeted for asset-backed securities. Another one is actually targeting money market funds. If you remember, during the Great Financial Recession early on, breaking the buck, you know, money markets that actually went below $1 in terms of NAV, they're trying to help support that area to make sure there's no run on money markets. Commercial paper, and then also they reinstituted, you know, primary dealer credit facilities that were basically initially credit facilities that investment banks could be able to access through the Great Financial Crisis. So what the Fed has really done is really expanded the plumbing in the financial system, and we've seen, you know, the market kind of reward that. Spreads have come in pretty nicely, and investment-grade vehicles, which traditionally have been safe, are acting more as they should be. So on the monetary side, the Fed's done a great job, as Rick mentioned, getting well ahead of the curve this time, not waiting for the plumbing to actually break, but instituting new piping to make sure that all these different parts of the fixed income world, particularly regarding credit, are able to work correctly. Probably the other thing, too, is this is the first time ever the Fed's actually going to be buying corporate bonds by purchasing securities in the secondary markets and also willing to go into investment-grade ETFs. So that's something that they've never done in the past. You know, primarily they always focus on agencies and non-agency mortgage backs. So this is a bit unique. That's definitely calmed the fixed income space.
No, thanks, Drew. And one thing, as you said, the Fed's never bought corporate bonds, so they're really pulling out all the stops and helping keep these markets liquid and preventing a 2008 type scenario where it was very difficult for any company to access any of the credit markets. I think they learned a lot from 2008, and as a result, they're moving faster, they're moving bigger, they're overshooting on doing too much rather than too little. And I think the primary goal is to try to keep as many people employed as possible until people can get back, until the virus issues start to subside. Rick, we always get a lot of questions about what are some of the things we're monitoring on the economy and closely watching to signal to us that things are getting better and not worse.
Yeah, I think the first item will be tomorrow morning when we hear jobless claims, because that's probably the most current government statistic we have on the health of at least the labor markets. So that would be closely watched. The other thing in terms of this virus, we're going to need a release from the constraints of movement. You know, we've websites that are out there on the coronavirus and really what's working best. Our policies of distancing ourselves from others is the single best way to slow down the virus. Unfortunately, with that, we eliminate the movement that allowed us to live our lives freely. So and we're just going up that curve right now. So as you're aware, New York has something like 60% of all the cases in the country. And so watching these number of not necessarily confirmed, because we're just rolling out the testing so much. So we're going to find out a whole lot more people are confirmed, but really I think more importantly is how many are needing to be hospitalized and do we have the facilities and capability to take care of those people. So we're seeing lots of really nice business solutions to the problem where we've seen one company that's repairing the old ventilators that had broken down and nobody had fixed them. So other companies are stepping up and importing from China and available where they don't need as many as they once did. So, for instance, in Tesla. But when we see consumer behavior able to go back to the restaurants, that is the end of this. And I'm really hoping that this is a 60-day or 90-day event. So I don't see this as a long-term event. I think it's going to be a 2020 event where we have second quarter being the absolute worst here by recovery, starting to recover in third and fourth quarters. But a lot of pain is going to be inflicted, and we're going to see a lot of people severely hurt financially. But with the stopgaps that the government's put in, mostly in this fiscal package of $2 trillion, if they can get it passed, that will go a long ways to eliminating all the worst-case scenarios. So with that, if we focus on corporate profits, you know, some estimates today are that earnings on the S&P 500 dropped down to $125. If that's the case, maybe we see this market bottom out, maybe around 2000. I think we've had a rally off a low, that is very constructive. Let's hope it sticks, but, there's a lot of bad news that's going to come out, and hopefully we can withstand that bad news and allow the measures that the stimulus package put in place, that they work their magic and hopefully kind of eliminate all these worst case scenarios.
Rick, what do you think once the stimulus bill's signed, what do you expect in the next few days, or has the market already run up in anticipation of that?
I think,
or Drew, you can answer that too.
A lot of anticipation was taken up in yesterday's and today's rally. Hopefully they can still approve something, because I guess now they're starting to stick in things that have to do with climate change and things like that. So in the event this gets stalled out on us, I think time is precious and time is critical here for getting something out there. So, because people are getting laid off today, and we need to make sure these unemployment insurance claims are shored up and companies have the cash flow to make it through.
Drew, any other thoughts on that front? You think the market's priced in a good chunk of the stimulus already?
I think they've definitely priced in a chunk of that. And also, I think the moves that we've seen due to the fixed income market stabilizing has also been priced in. You know, that left tail risk in terms of having an entire credit market meltdown, worst case scenario has been taken off, at least on the monetary side. You know, to Rick's point, I'd really echo, time is of the essence. You know, what we talk about quite a bit is demand delay versus demand destruction. Right now, a lot of places are going to be demand delay. But demand destruction can be pretty painful. And ultimately, if we don't do a great job in terms of supporting both Main Street and Wall Street this time, you know, the person that does, the small business owner that goes out of business won't be hiring their 30 employees back in 3 months or 9 months or even a year. So that's the part where, you know, time is definitely of the essence.
Thanks, Drew.
Yeah.
And go ahead, Rick.
What? I just wanted to add, one of the changes they made last night was to bar any business owned by President Trump, his family, or any business owned by a member of Congress or any executive departments or executive team would be barred from any loans or benefits from this package. So, in case anybody's wondering.
And maybe just to summarize, in terms of what we're trying to monitor, as Rick said, we want to monitor the path of the virus. When can people go back to work and their behavior gets back to normal? We're looking at the global policy response so far. That's been much better than I think the markets would have expected. Rick talked about the banking system. This is in 2008. The banking system's in great shape, and it's probably part of the solution this time instead of the problem in 2008. Drew talked about liquidity, market liquidity, financial conditions are much better today than they were in 2008, and part of that is the swiftness of the Fed. And then Rick mentioned watching the layoffs and the unemployment rate. You know, it's different once, you know, part of the job force goes unemployed. I think I saw the statistic or, you know, in the interview on 60 Minutes on Sunday, and one of the things that the former governor said was that they didn't move fast enough, and as a result, the unemployment rate spiked way up in 2008, and it took 10 years to get the unemployment rate back to where it was before 2008. And so times of the essence, we don't need we don't want to see a lot of layoffs because that really definitely stretches out the recovery period. You know, we do get a question all the time about equities. Is it time to sell down equities or valuations still considered low? You know, I've always said it's the hardest thing to do is to buy low because you're usually buying in the face of a lot of bad news, but it's usually the best decision if you look out a year or 2 years. And we do think it's at current levels, it's it is time to selectively get a little bit offensive, and we've been doing that in many of the portfolios, selling some of our weaker positions and upgrading them to better names because everything's down right now. We're also kind of going through the rebalance process also. If our stocks are supposed to be at 35% in a conservative account or moderate account, we want to get that back to that number. And so it's kind of the discipline of buying low. Drew, do you have anything to add on that front?
Yeah, you know, this was, you know, obviously a very quick reversal to trade down, you know, to a bear market territory, and actually the fastest down to 30%, you know, turnaround and drawdown actually. It's only happened 8 times in the last 70 years where the S&P has gone down about, you know, 25% or greater. And, you know, on a 3-year basis from the bottom, typically you've made money back. Even on a 10-year basis, you've done really, really well. The only time where you've only done okay actually was the 2000s decade. If you think about that, that was the tech wreck and the GFR. So two kind of double whammies in that decade. But if you're a long-term investor, you know, it always seems to be an okay time to be purchasing assets.
Rick, on the last on our last call last week, you made some comments about oil prices. Anything change on that front in terms of what's going on in the oil sector?
Well, I think that's probably the one that ends up really getting the highest number of bankruptcies, because without a substantial price increase, companies in what we refer to as the upstream in the drilling area, they're not going to do well at all through this. The pipeline companies will probably make it through fine. The refiners will do fine because their cost of the input of their oil they're buying has dropped dramatically. And the consumer, normally when prices drop, actually use a little more of the product. So we're probably going to see lower gasoline prices that actually add to a plus or stimulus to the economy for the average consumer that anyway is still driving their car. But when we get to the other side of this and they do need to go back to work, they're going to enjoy lower gasoline prices. And I think this carries on for some time here, because I don't think we'll have a quick turnaround. But as I mentioned, really, it's a global issue, and this is probably purely meant to drive our drillers out of business here in this country, and I think it will be successful for the most part, because they cannot drill a well and be profitable at this price. So, but it is a stimulus to the economy, and when airlines start taking off, they're going to enjoy lower jet fuel prices. When the cruise lines come back, they will as well. The trains, and so the entire transportation sector, the consumer that is still buying gasoline for a car and him switch to electric will be enjoying lower prices. So it's both
a supply problem and a demand problem, and it's probably one of the last areas that we would see improving.
It's going to be a tough place to be in business for some time to come here.
Maybe for both of you, Drew, first you, and then we'll come to Rick. What do you think the outlook is for the balance of the year? Rick talked about a bad second quarter in the economy and then things starting to pick up in the third and fourth quarter. Just maybe the overall outlook for the rest of the year for the markets.
Sure. I kind of use China as the base case scenario of kind of what can actually happen if you do social distancing, you shut things down for a little bit, and then you slowly reignite your economy. Definitely I think the numbers are going to get ugly because we actually haven't reported back, the unemployment numbers, the initial jobless claims, as Rick mentioned. We started to see some of the service PMI numbers come in, and those are probably going to just get worse. Until we really stabilize, with the stimulus package on the fiscal side. Ultimately, I think we do grind higher by the end of the year because this is not an 18-month process. I think, former chair, Fed Chair Bernanke was on CNBC this early this morning. People are using the word depression for this situation, and this is not a 12-year event like the Great Depression. This is what he equated to more of a storm. A natural disaster that's come, it's hit, we just got to weather through and get to the other side. Kind of going back to China, starting to see actually, we talked to a lot of people, as you mentioned earlier on the call, John, and a lot of private equity companies. So, the numbers that come out of China's government are always suspect in terms of GDP growth and whatnot. But we do have talked, even with clients that have done a lot of business with their own companies in China, we're starting to see their economy turn back in pretty quickly. For example, one of the partners that we partner with owns about 3,500 McDonald's stores in China and Hong Kong. And now they're seeing basically on a year-over-year basis about 90% back on revenues. So foot traffic is a little bit slower than it was prior to them shutting down their economy, but clearly there is some reversal. So that's kind of my base case at this point.
And Drew, we heard the same thing from Starbucks, that they're almost fully ramped back up in China in terms of foot traffic. So it seems like the process, maybe if that's the base case, the process maybe took, a couple of months to get back to normal here.
Yeah, I mean, the worst case scenario is basically looking like Italy, where they were very late to the game and still are going through those pain points. As even Rick mentioned, until we see peak cases, we see peak deaths, and we're probably a week or two off from seeing those. Considering where we are behind the timeline versus Italy, there is going to be a lot more psychological pain, I think, for investors.
Rick, what's any different viewpoint on the outlook for the rest of the year, or anything to add to what what Drew said?
No, since we last spoke on Friday, Goldman Sachs dramatically lowered their estimate of second quarter GDP from a minus 5 to a minus 24, so substantial, followed by a plus 12 in the third quarter. Interesting, we're seeing these all over the board. We're seeing other companies coming out with minus 6 for the second quarter, minus 12.5 for the second quarter, minus 15 for the second quarter. So the estimates are all over the board. What does turn around is the third and fourth quarters. Not all are positive. PIMCO still has a third quarter a recovery, mostly because they believe the stimulus, $2 trillion, is difficult to get out and spent in the economy. So in other words, if we give somebody $1,200, for instance, to spend, if they were to save that money, there's no impact in the economy, right? But if they were to spend that money and whoever they gave that money to was to spend that money and whoever that person gave it to is spend the money, you could add, you know, doubling, tripling, or quadrupling the economic stimulus quite quickly. So that's the reason why it's important to get it out into those people's hands who need it and will spend it. If it's saved, it's not going to help. But uniformly, we see third or fourth quarter positive under virtually every economic forecast that we've reviewed, and even for the year with the draconian second quarter that Goldman's come out with, they still only have the economy shrinking by a minus 3.1 for the entire year of 2020. So, and all of them have positive 2021. So, you know, there is light at the end of this tunnel, and I think that did say, and I think I mentioned on the last call, that we're going to find this one of the great buying opportunities here.
Thanks, Rick. And, you know, we oftentimes talk about selectively playing offense and defense in constructing or portfolios, and we've had we have the defensive positions with gold, treasuries, some of our fixed income investments, and the flip side on the offensive, we've been selectively adding to the offense here as prices have been getting cheaper, and so that would include some of our U.S. equities, international equities, and some of the real estate investments, but we're not, you know, we have to make sure we have our hedges in place, because you never know when, you know, the path of the virus may take a lot longer. We're not sure. We're watching it closely. But at the same time, as we've seen the last 2 days, we want to be positioned to take advantage of some of the opportunities that are presented our way. With that, I want to thank everyone for taking the time today. We are working hard to deliver for our clients, and it's an honor to do so. On behalf of Rick, Drew, and the entire team, I want to thank you. We will get through this, and we will continue to communicate with you directly through your wealth. We will continue to communicate, and please communicate directly to your wealth advisor and through other thought leadership pieces, which we're going to put on our website. And while we aren't taking live questions today, feel free to send us your questions, and we'll get back to you as soon as we can, and we'll keep the conference calls coming. Thank you, and stay healthy, and have a great day.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.